outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Gym.
Wayne, it is a miracle of miracles. I actually get to sit in my office at Sheridan College with you here in person. This is awesome. Like, I didn't know if this would ever happen, and I love this. Welcome to Wyoming.
I've seen part of this by video many times, but never been here. Yes. Sarah and I arrived yesterday from Rapid City, South Dakota, drove into Sheridan, Wyoming, and here we are for a few days before heading further north.
Heading on north. How has the road trip been going so far?
It's been very painful.
Yeah?
We've had some great conversations, great time with people, seen some beautiful stuff, but this has been a little more challenging. We've had problems with the vehicle. We've had to have some maintenance issues resolved. We've had trouble with my chemo and some of the reactions to it that makes driving late in the day complicated. So we're continuing. This may well be our last RV trip together, at least a long one like this. We may stick closer to home and do some camping things, but for a couple reasons. One, my chemo makes this difficult. And okay. Two, Sarah, we're discovering, is not calm. The traveling, the arrangements, the meetings we're going to. One of the things Sarah's therapist said in response to her trauma is that she really needs to be calm. She needs to be in calm environments for the rest of her life. So,
when did her therapist tell her this, just out of curiosity? Like, when did that come up in conversation or as part of her treatment?
I think he's been aiming that way for a while, but probably like, I would say 4 to 6 months ago.
Okay. Okay.
But we thought this was calming. I mean, we're just going on an RV and doing stuff, but there's so many components to make it work that Sarah is having a hard time relaxing and just enjoying each day for what it is. And she can do that in her home and her garden.
Yeah.
So this may change. I mean, this has been, the last 3 years is a very active time for us to, what is God doing? How does he want us to live in this space? What does that mean for me? What does that mean for travel, for conversations with people, for not traveling? If I'm just home caring for her in this season of life, that will be fine with me. I'm not bent to try to accomplish more for God in the world. I think being part of Sarah's calm and watching with God over what's going on in the world, gazing with him and holding space with his pain and purpose in the world, pain for the world and purpose in the world, is going to be joy enough for me.
Interesting.
We just got the last book done. It's okay. It's time is finally done. In fact, I got word today, the audio, which I recorded, has all been uploaded. So in about 10 days, it's going to be available. People would rather listen to me read it.
Okay.
Read it themselves. And I enjoy reading. I enjoy putting the emphasis to things that I meant when I wrote it that you don't get to do when you're writing.
Yeah.
So I'm excited about that finally becoming available. But
If I can listen to the author read their own book, that for me is by far the better way to do it, because it's the content they created. They're reading and putting the emphasis on things. They're using different voice inflections and that type of thing, given what they're going through.
Yeah.
And that, like, it makes it feel even that much more authentic to being able to connect with the author and what was their original intent and where was their heart as they were moving forward with it. So that I love that in the writing process or listening process.
Well, in about 10 days, you'll be able to get the audio version.
Can't wait.
Plus, you do a lot of driving here in Wyoming.
Oh, my gosh.
So you get to listen to stuff.
We do a lot of driving here in Wyoming. So tell me a little bit about the themes of the conversations. So you've been in Rapid, you had some conversations there. Did you have any conversations in Denver, or was that mainly just hanging out with family?
That was mainly family, yeah.
Okay. What have you started to see as some of the conversations that you got into specifically in Rapid City as you were hanging out with people?
Pretty much similar to what I do. I mean, people can talk about the living love thing and what that looks like, the kind of being dislodged from a normal religious institution and how to live my life that way. And so there's some concern there as well. So a lot of it's just, I think what people get a taste of when they sit with me for 3 or 4 or 5 hours is they get a feel for what does it mean to live loved? Mm-hmm. What does it mean to have a trust in God that's bigger than the things that are happening to me?
Whew. Yeah.
And I think that's what Sarah and I have been learning. And it's fun to think inside that reality, because most of us don't. Our fears and anxieties, they drag us out of that reality all the time.
Yeah.
And substitute this false pressure from the world or false fears or all of that. And so what does it mean when love has time to season in a life? And how does that change the way you think about what's coming at you? Mm-hmm. And being more clear-headed because you're not so anxious over everything that can disturb your life in a given moment or time. So
I think the thing that really is standing out to me is the conversation about Sarah needing to be calm. Mm. Because like I hear you say that, and I'm like, what on earth would it be like to live a life that was oriented around being calm? Especially because the fears, the pressures, the concerns of this world, they're all, like for me anyway, they're always present. Like they're all, it feels like they're just on the cusp of my peripheral. And if I give them a minute, then they will dominate my entire attention if I give them a second.
Yeah.
Whether it's being, you know, being a dad of two young kids or a husband or faculty member or all those different things, you know, we've talked about rest, love, and play. But now I'm thinking about this orientation of what would it be like to center a life around living to be calm? What, I mean, where do you even, like, where does she start with that? How does she gauge that? Like, how are the two of you finding that? Because I'm thinking about my world, and especially with the two kiddos and Jess and I being, like, calm, not one of the primary descriptors of how I'm currently existing in the world.
Well, calm is not necessarily circumstantial.
Okay.
It's a heart thing. Okay. So, and I don't think Sarah and I have sat down and said, okay, what is the strategy to keep Sarah calm?
Yeah.
I think Philippians 4 is aiming toward this when it says, let the peace of Christ umpire your heart or referee your heart, which means, man, I get into a situation and realize, okay, I'm not calm here.
Yeah.
So is the answer, do I move out of that situation and find something calmer? Or is there something going on inside that doesn't allow me to be calm in the midst of what I'm at?
Hmm.
And I think everything, part of that slowing my pace to Sarah's pace is part of what's been calming me. Because I'm not rushing at such a breakneck speed. And when I am, things happen that aren't always positive. So learning to be calm inside, I think, is the real essence of that. Even when, like, the chemo effects or things come at you, the calmness is not, well, I've got to fix the effect. I was on a prayer time this morning and honestly struggling because it seemed like most of our conversation was, how do we get God to fix this stuff? And my orientation is not that. It's not, how does God fix that stuff?
Yeah.
It's how does God calm my heart in the midst of this stuff? And now calmer with him, I can see his purpose in what's going on that's difficult and hard and threatening and all. I can see a purpose that's bigger than Wayne's need to have a lack of conflict around his life.
Mm.
And to me, that's where I see Jesus living. And that's where I see the early apostles trying to find their way into that reality where the peace of Christ umpires our heart. So with Sarah and I, we can look, okay, was the day, did it lend itself toward peace? And if it didn't, and if traveling around in an RV doesn't lend itself toward peace for Sarah, then there's other ways we do what God wants us to do in the world. That's not one of those hills to die on. We're going to RV no matter what, because we've got this thing. And now we'll sell it. We'll move on to something else in our life if we're done with it. But we got to get home from this trip first. So. We've been as far east as we're going, Rapid City, and now we're headed north. I think we'll get to Calgary. The weather looks like it's holding up good. Nothing's no big winter storms are moving in. And then we'll make our way down to Coeur d'Alene and then make some kind of arc through Washington and Oregon and then through California and home.
Okay.
So that's the plan at this point.
Okay. I think that's a really good orientation in regards to the idea of calm slash peace. And man, especially when I think about life as Jess and I are living it and not, again, not dying on that hill. I think that's part of it, is it's like, okay, sometimes I get stuck in the, I need to die on this hill, or this is a priority of or a value that I've got to sacrifice for. I've got to sacrifice my peace for. And yet, is it really? Like, I found myself thinking through that as you were talking about that. Like, for example, I mean, just the traveling thing. This isn't a hill that we have to die on. Does it facilitate peace? No. If it does not, okay, then we can find some other way. God has another way through that maintains that space of peace or calmness for Sarah's heart and for yours.
Yep. Like with the trauma response from Sarah,
there's
not much peace in her heart. And part of it is she doesn't see options.
Oh, interesting.
She's
okay.
Coming towards something that's going to be stressful.
Yeah.
And my orientation toward things that are potentially stressful is, well, what other options are there? Like if we arrive at a park, RV park, and they're all full.
Yep.
Or hookups don't work. And that, we're definitely off season. We can find a place to park anywhere. But Sarah sees it as, no, what if we get there and we can't? So she doesn't see options. So part of my gift to Sarah right now is to be able, when she feels that, to go, well, here's the other options we have. If that doesn't work, we can do this. If winter's coming on early, we don't go to Calgary, we can move on. So there's always options. And for whatever reason, and they say that's true of people who have suffered trauma, is that they don't see options. So they just see what's ahead and how are we going to negotiate. And I don't know if I get overwhelmed and it's all that. So part of our conversation right now is to sort through options with her. So she realizes we're not stuck here.
Well, that comes back to, I mean, the two things that stand out to me in that is the idea of there's no escape, right? So especially thinking about my own experiences as well as other victims that I've worked with, and it feels like there are no other options. It's there's no escape from this situation. So how do I cope with it? How do I survive it? How do I get through it? Versus there are other options. Like that's, I mean, gosh, that is a completely different perspective. And the way that you view, the way that you approach challenges is different.
Yes.
Right? Like if there's no escape, how do I cope? Versus, okay, there's other options. How do we explore this? What does creative problem solving look like in this way that's going to continue to maintain that sense of rest, love, and play, or continue to maintain that space of peace?
Which gives us a definite way to look at something other than I'm stuck, I'm overwhelmed, and until God fixes it, I can't move forward. And I think once we're overwhelmed, we've already lost. Because they're just, I had a thing where this week, because of some of the reactions to my medication, I got 3 hours of sleep one night, 4 hours of sleep the next night, and then I had to drive 6.5 hours the next day. And I'm like, and Sarah and I just said, okay, I may not be able to do this because I have a sleepy time after lunch where Sarah and I very aggressively, she keeps an eye on me. So when I nod off, she can yell, hey, dude, wake up before you leave the lane you're in.
Yeah.
But one of our options was, listen, if we have to pull off and stay an hour and I'll take a nap or whatever, we'll just do whatever we have to do. And if we don't get to where we were wanting to get tonight, no harm, no foul. We'll just find a Walmart parking lot, if nothing else, and pull in and take a nap.
Yep.
So the options, I think being overwhelmed, when I hear it from people, like laying there at night trying to get to sleep, and I used to have all kinds of tactics to do that, and none of them were working.
Of course.
And so it's 3 a.m, I'm wide awake, my thoughts are going everywhere, and then all of a sudden it hit me. I don't know if this is from God or whatever. You can't chase sleep. You just got to let sleep overrun you. And that was really, it was a thing for me because I laid there then, stopped all the things I was doing to try to sleep, and I let sleep overrun me. And I've been doing that ever since when I have those kinds of chemo reactions. I just lay there and go, okay, I'm going to let sleep come to me. I'm not going to go get it. And there's so many other things that would apply to in my life. I'm going to let it come to me. The prayer I've... One of my favorite things from Matthew 6 when Jesus says, I'm trying to get you to do is to relax and not be so preoccupied with getting that you can't respond to God's giving. And so getting to sleep, getting to where you think you need to, whenever I'm in get mode, there's no calm. When I can wake up in the morning and say, God, what are you giving me today? I mean, I look at the world. I mean, today, as we record this, Israel just shot a missile into another country to try and get Hamas.
Yep.
That's a major step of violation of national sovereignty.
Yeah.
And I mean, I don't, I get Israel's passion to eliminate Hamas from the world.
Yeah.
But what they're doing is completely disregarding anybody else in the world.
Yes.
And there's going to be a price to pay for that at some point.
Yeah.
And I think it's foolhardy. I'm not the prime minister or president of Israel, but I think it's a crazy mission. I think there's other ways to do that without firing a missile in another country. But that's the world, the ever-increasing darkness of that. The Supreme Court in lockstep with President Trump, which is just making... I look at these guys and go, okay, never in my life has the Supreme Court been as partisan as it is today.
Yes.
And some would argue, well, back in the 60s, all the left did. Yeah, but not like this. Not giving power to a president that they're not going to want a left-leaning president to have.
Yeah.
They're not.
Yeah.
So is the world getting darker? Every day. But God has options. God's purpose is unfolding in these things. And I meet with people who are angry or frustrated at it, and I go, okay, I don't share that with you.
Yeah.
I don't like what's going on in the world.
Yeah.
But I have a God whose purpose is to redeem the whole of it. And sometimes that means things get darker and people suffer and it's hurtful. And I want to live inside that with God. I want to, as we've talked about a couple of years ago, holding space for God's pain and being in that, that when people are hurting in the world and children are starving in Gaza and famine is destroying people in Africa and all those things, you've got to say, God hurts with all that. Mm. And God has a redemptive purpose that's bigger than we can see. So I wake up today, God, what are you giving me today? What do you give me to negotiate my life, to love people I'm with? In that space, I think there's plenty of peace and rest and goodness. Outside of that, when I'm trying to get God to fix the world in a way that will make me comfortable, that's a losing proposition.
I'm really curious, how many evangelical Christians. So I wonder, like, when you say that, Wayne, I wonder how many evangelical Christians actually believe that God is trying to redeem the whole of it.
12.
I mean, the thought of that, like, I think about all the ideologies, all the messages that I hear. It's not that God is trying to redeem the whole of it. It's God's trying to redeem a select audience of it, and anybody else that's out there, well, I mean, yes, God's love can get to them, but it's probably not because they're giving themselves over to all those other ideas. They're not part of us. And so there's no way that God's trying to redeem the whole of it.
But the whole of it to me means creation.
Okay.
And how it was violated, and redeeming a new heaven and a new earth.
Okay.
To me, the whole of it is not everybody gets in on that. Now, I know.
Agreed. Yeah. Okay. Yes.
I know people who believe that, but I don't find the scriptural lines that get me there.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever of it God gets to redeem, whatever of humanity God gets to redeem, God bless him. Go for it. Get all you can. But I don't know how to draw that line.
I think that's the thing, is his heart is that every single one of his children would fall into that category. Now, because of free will, because of people's choices, etc., they can choose whether or not to accept, embrace that love and pursue him, follow him, right?
Yep. Yep.
But that his intent is to redeem all of it, to draw every single individual into his love, his life, his freedom, his compassion.
That's always been his desire. The idea we've had that God's got a home team and an away team and loves to just blast the away team to oblivion.
Yes.
Is absurd. God's desire is that all men be saved, and all women. That includes them too.
Yeah.
But yes, all of it. I mean, that's God's agenda. That's God's desire. That's God. God's doing everything he can to redeem all of it.
Yeah.
In terms of the creation.
Yeah.
And then as much of humanity as that can include. I read someone wrote me this week, John, out of South Africa, and he was reading the story of Sarah lying about whether she laughed at God when she's going to have a child, and she's laughing, and he said this, "I've always glossed over this, but this time around, I'm struck by the forbearance of our God. Lie to him, and we aren't suddenly struck by lightning or swallowed by the earth." And when I read that thing, you know, I was raised with that.
Yes.
Idea.
Absolutely.
That God, boy, you lie to God or you try to mess with God or you, you know, break some promise to him and boy, he's going to level you.
He's going to hammer you.
It caused me to think about you got Sarah laughing, but then you've got, or Sarah lying.
Yeah.
And then you've got Abraham lying about Sarah and nearly getting her raped by Pharaoh.
Correct.
So you've got, even among the great litany of faith, you've got people making mistakes.
Yes.
And God's not calling down fire from heaven to level them. That God's love for us and God's love for broken humanity. He gives breath today, not if you're a believer or not.
Yeah.
He gives breath to the world today. He gives his love to every creature, whether it's received and respected or rejected, he still gives, which is what he invites us to do.
Yeah.
And it's hard because we want people to earn it. We want to try to earn it ourselves, and then we want other people to earn it. Yeah, you're not worthy of it because you're messing up still.
Gosh.
Yeah.
But then I think one of the notes that I wrote down was this idea of how much of our prayer life revolves around that perspective, more of the trauma perspective of there is no escape. How do I endure this? Versus the pause. Like if you actually orient around God is actively pursuing and trying to redeem every single one of his beloved, that he's offering active invitations to receive and enjoy his love and his life. And he's trying to redeem creation. How does that change that perspective of there's no way out, so I have to either endure this, I have to fight this, I have to avoid this, but there's no way out. This is the option, period.
Or there's no way through.
There's no way through. Yeah.
And there's always a way through. That's what God's promised us. I mean, even if the world's going to grow darker, and I think it is,
yes.
And I think we're on a curve now of... I feel badly about the horrible pain that may lay ahead for many people.
Yeah.
There's a way through that. If you're a mother with starving kids in Gaza, there's a way God wants to be with you today.
Yeah.
And there's options he may have that you're not seeing or whatever other kind of need you might have. It's awesome to me how God can find a redemptive way through anything. And it's not always easy to see and relax into, but I tell you, it is something we relax into rather than it's something we fight our way into.
Or chase or pray into existence. Gosh, thinking about the forceful ones will be the ones who will take it, you know, like that forceful prayer, and I'm going to make this happen and I'm going to breathe this into existence because that's what I'm going to do. And it's like, gosh, how much stress. That is anything but calm. There's no peace or calmness in that at all.
And Steve wrote us about that.
Okay.
We had that conversation a while back about, you know, pressing through and fighting for healing or whatever. He said, I really appreciate your latest conversation with Kyle about loving through pain. I recently watched in awe as my wife sat through the pain of others. I think God just showed her how to do it at the time when she needed it. A few months ago, she had to say goodbye to her best friend from childhood as she lost a battle with cancer. She went and sat with her in her hospital room and would go and get whatever the family needed, listen as they cried, and literally sat through the pain with them. It was so beautiful. It was relaxed. It was not strident. It was abiding. Ironically, she also sat with them as a gaggle of people from their church came in and started storming heaven and commanding her to have more faith and doing all that routine. Afterwards, her husband turned to the nurse and said, please don't let them back in here again. It was such a night and day contrast of how to sit through pain with others well and how not to do it. One looked a whole lot more like father than the other. Thanks for spending time on this topic. It was needed and makes an enormous difference. I love that.
Jeez.
That's the contrast.
Yeah.
And not just for praying for people in need. It's the contrast between how I wake up to my day. Am I fighting through it, storming heaven, frustrated that God's not giving me the answer? I think I need to fix this. Or is it me finding my rest in God, his presence with me, and how he wants to lead me through this? And that's one of the conversations we had at length in Rapid City was, you know, how to figure out what God is doing, where he's doing it, what I should, whether I feel his love or I don't. And the reality is it's not more logical, theological answers we need.
Yeah.
It's presence. If he's present with me, and I don't mean an abstract theological, yes, God's always present. I mean, I'm aware that God, it may not always be a feeling, but I am aware, even when I'm being diagnosed with cancer and about going into back surgery,
or
I'm aware, even when Sarah's gone, I'm aware that I'm not alone, that there's presence. And if there's presence, there's options.
Yeah.
And I'm better able to discern that when I come to rest in him and let him come, just like sleep, let him come to me.
Yeah.
And I'm open, I've got my eyes, I'm surrendering to his light and life. But when I'm aware, I'm at peace with him. And where I'm not aware, then I've got to fight my way into that. And I've been that gaggle of people fighting my way into something. And if it ever bore fruit, it would be worth it. It just never did.
Why were we taught that, though? Like, what did we gain from teaching that? I think about, like, because I grew up very similar perspective of the force and making it happen, bringing it into existence. I mean, the idea of walking through something, of being at rest with something, of pursuing his peace and calmness in this, they would give you like a cursory touch on it, but it was all of these ideas about the forcefulness of making it happen. Why did we go that direction?
Two things I hear you talk about that I would consider. One, people we thought were just kind of trusting it to God were like fatalistic.
Okay.
There was no engagement with presence, so it didn't seem to do anything. It was just fatalists, and fatalism doesn't work either. Okay, I'm just going to take whatever comes.
And
that's part of it.
That's giving up. That's hopelessness.
It is hopelessness. Yeah. And if you're trying to find hope in that, I can't do anything, so God's just going to leave me in this mess. The other side of it is the illusion of control.
Yeah.
If the reason God hasn't done something for me is because I haven't done something from me that he requires.
Yep.
So I can keep trying. If it's praying more, I can pray more. If it's screaming at God, I can scream at God. If it's getting more people in my hospital room to storm heaven's gates with me, it gives the illusion of control. And even when it doesn't work, you know, I've had experience in my own family of people who've died and put them on ice and prayed for them weeks after they died. Just this sickness is not unto death. And boy, we're going to, and then it never works. It just storming heaven's gates with our own effort and ingenuity is just not fruitful. If you want to spend some time, I would do it like Jesus did it. You know, go out on the mountaintop and spend the night and just sit with God in the midst of whatever's coming your way. Sarah and I saw something the other day, and somebody's going to have to tell me where this is. I was going to try and source it. We were watching a movie or something, TV show. And one of the refrains that kept coming up was, sit in your problem and the answer will find you. And I thought, boy, that's very close to what I believe. We mostly, if we have a problem, we try and resist it.
Yep.
Or we try to ignore it. That's the other thing.
Yeah.
Make the best. But this was just sit in it. Mm. Just sit in the problem and the answer will find you. And I would change that to God will find you.
Mm.
And so, you want to sit in your pain with God, which I do now.
Yeah.
If I want to sit in a situation I can't fix, I just sit in it with God and let the answer come. Not Not in the next 5 seconds, maybe not in the next 5 days.
Yeah.
But God has a way. That whole idea of trying to stop getting and look for what God is giving. And I may want an answer to this situation today, but God doesn't have it for me today. So I can beg, cajole, whatever. And it's not going to be fruitful. I'm going to be less and less aware of presence when I'm trying to get him to do what I want. But the more surrendered I can be, the more of just, okay, God, if this is where we are right now, walk me through this and be at peace with that. I love how that sets my heart at ease in his goodness.
Yeah. I was dying laughing internally because when you were talking about like the relentlessness, right? And like, I'm going to storm the gates of heaven and I'm going to have them come back or, you know, whatever. Like I was chuckling and I was like, if I was the one on the other side of heaven's gates, I'd be looking at God and Jesus and be like, don't you dare open that freaking gate. Like, I'm not going back. Don't you dare do that. Don't you dare send me back. You
know, like, wow.
I'm just not in like a, my family's hurting and I don't want to be with them. But it's like, really? Like, you guys are praying that I come back, and I understand and I deeply appreciate and empathize with the fact that you're hurting. Like, I get that. I get that you're missing. Like,
right.
But I'm with my Father in heaven. Like, you're desperately praying for me to come back. And I'm standing up there being like, oh, don't you do it, God. That is one of those prayers that you better not answer.
So Jesus saying Satan has demanded permission to sift you like wheat. You told him no, right?
Exactly.
What do you mean, yes? What the blazes is going on here? And I hear that. Because I think we forget. Death is only bad for those who are still here.
Yeah.
Yes. A friend whose spouse died recently. And you go, you know what? The best day of her life, face to face with Jesus, is the worst day of his. And that's the conundrum of death.
Yeah.
So you don't encourage him by saying, oh, she's in a better place.
No,
that's
totally
just insane. But I'm sorry you're going through this.
Yeah.
I'm sorry you're experiencing this pain. God's going to be big enough to walk you through this, which, you know, that's where I found comfort, even when Sarah was gone. And I'm being told there's less than 1% chance you guys will ever connect again.
Yep.
My heart was, I thought God said you would do this, so I'm going to stake my stuff there. But even if not, you have a way for me through the rest of my life. My life's not over because of that happening to me.
Yep.
And I think that's where, to me, I find the peace that umpires my heart. Where does peace, and it doesn't mean choose the path of least resistance.
Correct.
That's not what letting peace umpire your heart. It's letting, if I don't have it, find my way into it, or have it, live there, where circumstances don't provide it, I can say, okay, can I change the circumstances? Are there options? If they're not options, then how do I find his peace in the midst of it? Mm. And to me, this whole life of living loved and living in his goodness is, there's no way that won't prevail.
Yeah.
Over anything the world can throw at you.
Hmm. It's interesting. I'm thinking about, so you were here, just had a conversation with a bunch of my students.
Yeah, it was fun. Sociology class.
It was sociology class.
On bridge building.
Yes.
Language of healing.
And I just think about a lot of their questions. And I mean, it was a great conversation. But one of the things that stands out to me is I wonder how many of them know that level of peace or living in a space of calm, especially in the worlds that they're trying to navigate. And I mean, they're...
And especially at their ages.
Yes.
How do you... I mean, at that age, I was freaked out by everything.
Yeah.
It was all about even, you know, preparing for ministry and going to college for that, and language I wouldn't use today, but still I did then. And it was complete frustration whenever God didn't arrange my life in a way that brought me comfort.
Yeah.
And so it takes time to learn these things. Mm. And they're growing up in a very much scarier world than I grew up in.
Ooh, yeah.
Especially when we talk about sociology and language of healing and the polarization of, because I was thinking about this class, because you told me yesterday, you come and talk to my sociology class. I guess I could. I haven't done bridge building. I had to go back and look at language of healing. What's in this book anyway? It's been a while. But when I think of how polarized the world was when this began, this bridge building thing in the late 80s,
yeah,
early 90s, and how polarized we are now, the difference is night and day.
Yeah.
35 years ago, people were wanting common ground. They were wanting to find a way through these things.
Yep.
And the difference between the empowered and the disempowered wasn't that great. And there was a compassion to find common ground. Now, the animosity that we're being presented by the political choices of the 21st century, whether it's left or right, are both very polarized, very arrogant, very aggressive, very much in your face. You're going to have to do what I want you to do if I have the power to make you. I think about the challenges of finding the common ground in this environment I don't see many options there unless this is actually building toward the end of the age and part of the world coming unglued and falling apart and finally having to turn to Jesus and say, rescue us. And I'm very aware that Sarah and I talk about this a lot. We grew up in a time when the challenges of life on a geopolitical scale were less than any generation before us.
Yeah.
And when the previous one at World War II, no telling what the subsequent ones have to us.
Yeah.
We lived in a time of upward mobility, relative comfort, technology increasing, comforts of life growing. I mean, we have lived, Sarah and I, in a world, even the poorest among us in American culture would say, you've had a life better than 0.001% of humanity that has ever lived on the face of the earth.
Yeah.
And the fact that we were born here and not in Gaza and not in Africa and not, I mean, that just, it boggles the mind because there's nothing I did
correct
to get the benefits that I enjoyed.
Yeah,
my whole life.
Man, I think one of the questions that I just resonated so deeply that one of the students asked was Amara. One of the students just asking about how do we find purpose? Where do we find that sense of purpose? That reason for living on this planet, especially in our current day and age and culture, because that's that need, that desire, it's so innate to humanity, and it's so innate to especially this developmental stage of these young people as they're navigating this. And yet, what a freaking challenging time to try to find that, because her comment was like, how do I find that sense of purpose and meaning without going over to one of these groups and identifying with one of these like super intense radical tribes? How do I find that sense of meaning and purpose in life?
Yeah, because the question was, why do we end up splitting into these very polarized groups?
Yeah.
And it was to find purpose.
Yes.
And if I find purpose in my left-leaning views or my right-leaning views, and then I find my champion, and now I'm completely given over to that as my purpose in life.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's where you got to find purpose in the reality of who God is and how he makes himself known to you and his redemption unfolding in the earth. And to me, that's the purpose that's glorious. And how do I become a redemptive influence in Sarah's life, in my neighbor's lives, and in just the people I cross, maybe park next to us in an RV park?
Yeah.
Every day offers the adventure of how do I reflect that redemption, reconciliation in the world. And I don't mean I set up a little pulpit out beside my RV and preach to the neighborhood. I just, how you relate to people and how you treat them and how you care. And if our purpose is, if my purpose wasn't found in him, there's nothing in this world that would satisfy in the long term.
Yep.
Whether I find a purpose in my political ambitions or my trying to win influence in the culture or just, man, the most disturbing thing I heard in class is this open gun carry law in Wyoming, people taking guns to school with them because in case a shooter comes, we all got guns at school because more guns will fix it.
Yeah.
Man.
Well, and I mean, the sad part is that we're not the only state that's doing that by any means.
You know? No, you're not.
I mean, that's
well, we're getting out of the state as soon as we can.
No, shit. But I mean, I was in another conversation with a young person that's in their mid-20s, and they were talking about trying to find, they were talking about dating relationships and trying to find a sense of self and what does that look like. And for me, it's like, man, if you don't start with your identity being rooted in the love and the life of Christ, especially in today's age, I don't know a way through. I can't imagine a way through of trying to do that. And I think here's one of the intriguing hopes is that more and more I'm seeing coming across my feeds, specifically in sociology and young people, that 15 to 25 age demographic, there is a huge interest in faith, but they don't know where to go.
Right.
There's this huge interest in, I think there is something out there. I think there is a essence of love, a spirit of love that is out there in the world that genuinely cares about me. And there's something better that I can live my life for, but they don't know where to go to find that, to connect with that, to say, okay, where do I find the truth here? How do I connect with the truth here? How do I find that sense of self in respect and authored by the love of Christ?
Yeah, that's hard because the institutions you would think you would go to are so corrupted and twisted.
Yeah.
And not all of them.
No.
I mean, we've said that often.
Yep.
But the people who have the microphones representing Jesus in the world,
yeah,
or saying they do,
yeah,
don't. And so then that's where people are confused.
Yep.
It's always been true, though, that most people have come to Christ through their relationship with a friend.
Yeah.
Rather than something else. So if we keep being redemptive in the world, then God gets to do what he wants to do.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.